Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast typically about Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I've got another wonderful guest with me today. I've got Chance Burleson with me, and we're just going to talk about his journey, and we'll talk a little Kenpo, we'll talk a little bit of other arts. I'm sure we're going to talk some jiu-jitsu, since I'm a recent student of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I understand that Chance has been training with my instructor as well, so we'll certainly get into that. But I usually kind of get into my background. Won't get into it too much, but just mention that I have ranks in Kenpo, in Capoeira, done a little bit of Taekwondo and Hapkido and some boxing as well. And as just discussed, now a new Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu student as well. So that's the quick version of my story. So we will turn it over to you. How did the martial arts find you? Where did you get started? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Sounds good. So the martial arts found me when I was about 4 years old. My father was a pretty big, iconic Texas karate guy. His story, he started boxing in the Navy when he was obviously very young. Got stationed in Okinawa and started training in traditional Okinawan martial arts. Went to Japan, studied judo, went to the Philippines, studied Kali, and then came back to Texas and then began doing Taekwondo, which is what he was ranked the highest in, under Jun Ri.
Oh, very nice.
And, so I showed up in 1972 and he had already won the first national karate champion in 64, and he'd already had several schools, and he was a real big deal. I didn't understand that. I was just a little kid. I didn't know anything about that. I remember my first memory of martial arts is hearing my dad yell and do a kiai, and I thought it was the funniest thing that I had ever heard in my entire life. I could not stop laughing, and he got so mad at me because I wasn't taking it seriously, and he would, and I would, I would just die laughing. I fell in love with it immediately, and you got to understand, in 1978, there weren't a lot of kids that did martial arts, so I was in that kind of Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, the 18 to 25 males, those are the ones that did martial arts. Karate Kid hadn't happened yet. So I was one of the few kids in the school when the big craze happened with the Karate Kid and Ralph Macchio and the karate movies and all that. And then the huge influx of kids that came in. And I've never done anything but this. I bought my first school from my dad when I was 17, and I'm very not 17 anymore. And so this is all I've ever done, was train in martial arts. I'm very fortunate because I think a lot of the unhappiness that I see in the world is people living lives that they weren't designed to live. In other words, they were born with a certain skill set and gifts, and whatever they've chosen to do with their life does not give them the opportunity to authentically use the skills they were born with. Does that make sense? I think we have a lot of artists that are bookkeepers to pay the bills. We might even have some mathematicians that are doing graphic design to pay the bills. But when we throw our efforts into doing something that goes against who we really are, I think that causes unhappiness. And I'm very blessed and fortunate because there's nothing I was designed to do better than teach martial arts. it's exactly who I am and kind of like what God made me to be. And I didn't seek it out. It found me. So I'm very fortunate. I know that a lot of people just don't have, they didn't get the luck of the draw. Does that make sense? Yeah. I feel like I was born with like a spiritual trust fund where my life just showed up for me and laid itself out in front of me. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful because I think one of the other things that makes people truly happy is serving. And pouring ourselves into other people and helping other people. And there's nothing better than running a martial arts school to pour yourself into people and really help them and serve them. I was present in the martial arts during what they call the old guard. So when I was a kid, the old guard was, let's say, Reggie Darden, you run a martial arts school back in the 70s. Right, and you're this great grand poobah, grandmaster, head of all you survey, and all of your students are lucky to have you. That's the old guard, is that you're a super big deal, and all the little peasants and peons in your school are fortunate to have you in your life. And I remember when martial arts was like that. I was a little kid, but I do remember that. I'm not old school. I'm very new school. And the new school is, they're not lucky to have me. I'm lucky to have them. I am lucky that they come in here and place their trust in me, and they give me their loyalty and their attention, and it allows me to serve them. Does that make sense? It's like an upside down triangle. I'm not in charge. I'm the, you know, I might look like I'm first, but I'm actually last. My job is to wash feet and to help people and to really, really serve them. And I'm very grateful that my mentors in martial arts have a servant's heart. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You can't, the quote unquote master. I don't want to use that term, but the teacher, the leader of the school or the group, they don't get to be that without the students. And there's definitely been a change in the way of thinking over the years and in schools.
For the better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I believe, you know, the way I it's funny because I followed some of your stuff and I see some stuff that that you've commented on. And I cannot tell you how much I wish I could change the terminology in our system, because I was born into a system. This is the way it was set up when I showed up, is that first through fourth is Mr. or Mrs. Fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth is master. And then ninth is grandmaster. You know, and I cannot, and I have not been quiet about how uncomfortable I am with these words. I'm very uncomfortable with it. I still refuse to introduce myself by that title. I won't stop somebody else from saying it, but I'm not going to introduce myself that way. And when people ask, like students, even a kid asks me, what do I call you? I'm like, just call me Mr. Burleson. Just call me Mr. Burleson. Because it feels pretentious. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It feels pretentious. Now, here's the thing, Reggie, is that I've been teaching long enough. I have master level black belts underneath me. They're not uncomfortable with that word. like they've earned it. They've got decades in the martial arts underneath me. They've paid their dues. They're very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that I have that are fifth degree or higher, they're over 30 and they started with me before they were 10. So I get that they have paid their dues and they like that they have earned that. But do you know why I'm so uncomfortable with the term Master Burleson?
Go ahead.
I'll tell you. That's my dad. when I was growing up, that was Master Burleson. And in my mind, masters are old men. And I still don't view myself as an old man yet. I am. I'm totally an old man. But in my mind, I'm not. I'm super young, and I'm, you know what I mean? I barely feel like a mister. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's kind of my standpoint on everything. None of my mentors, like Hanshi Kovart, if you meet him, do you know what he'll say? Hi, I'm Dave Kovart. Like, he won't say his title. You know, Chip Townsend, who's one of my best friends, guy in Abilene, that 14-time world-breaking champion, he's a super big deal. Well, I'm Chip. You know what I mean? And these are the people that I look up to. So that's kind of why I behave the way I do.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the whole master, grandmaster term, in mainly because there's so much to learn. There's so much knowledge that you gain in the training. Just looking at one art. So in Kenpo, we have our self-defense techniques, we have our forms, we have our basics. And okay, yes, there is a finite number of those movements. And in you could say that, okay, you're gonna master those finite movements. However, there's so many other little pieces and so many other little details, so much other specific knowledge and experience that you gain that one person can't get that in a lifetime. And the way that I see it, no one can truly master any particular art in their lifetime. It would take multiple lifetimes to be able to master anything. And even then, I don't feel like you could ever really, really master that. Because then, in my mind, that's you've reached the end, and there's no more room to grow. There's no more, and I don't think anything works like that. There's always room to grow. There's always room to improve. So, I've never been a fan of that title. Just because you can't know everything, you can't truly quote unquote master anything. So, but you know, that's,
well, at least you can imagine how I feel, because I still have to use it. And and here's what's funny, Reggie, I have no issue addressing somebody else as master. It's when it's applied to me that it kind of makes me come out of my skin a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But you know, it is what it is. It's the rank and file that I was born into. And, we did rewrite our black belt degree curriculum. Because now that obviously I'm kind of running Legends, Dad's passed, me and my black belts got together and we took out 10th. We made it to where you cannot test for 10th degree black belt. The only way you can make 10th is if you die a 9th. And because are you from Texas?
No, I'm originally from California, but
yeah. Oh, really? Oh, so you're familiar with the Tracy
Kempo
school.
Yeah, actually the first Kempo school I started in was, we weren't technically a Tracy school, but we've followed under that lineage and that one, I guess, version, early version of their curriculum. So for simplistic purposes, yeah, it was a Tracy school. So
okay. So I don't know if it's like this in California, but I do know that in Texas everybody's a 10th degree black belt. They're all over the plate. They're everywhere. They're coming out of the woodworks. 10th degree black belts are like somebody threw a gremlin in a swimming pool and they just multiplied. They're everywhere.
You sure you're not a Kenpo person? I'm going to get some hate from Kenpo people, I'm sure. But yeah, there's.
So here's the thing, Reggie. What I think about when it comes to like super high ranking martial arts, it's like inflation. The more money you print, the less it's worth. The more everyone's a 10th degree black belt, the less it means anything.
Oh,
does that make sense?
I'm 100% with you on that.
And so when I kind of got in the back pocket, now my father was the one who put me in Dave Kovar's back pocket. We were in Las Vegas, you know, that big super show they used to have every year. And he said, I don't care what you do this weekend, but I want you to go to his seminars and I want you to do whatever he tells you. Because there are guys all over the country that are experts that can show you how to run a school, and one or two of them still have their soul. And he said, and that's one of them. And so I started studying him like a book. I went to Sacramento. I trained with him. I met his people. And what I found is that all of the guys that he has running schools, they have something in common. One, they have humility. Two, they have a higher level of skill than anybody I'd ever met. Three, they had black belts in multiple styles. They had black belts in Okinawan Kobudo. They had black belts in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. They had black belts in Kenpo. Like no black belt he had running one of his nine schools only had one black belt, right? And you know what the other thing that I noticed? They had fewer degree stripes on their belts than everybody else. Like their third degree and fourth degree was equal to a sixth or a seventh in my world. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? And I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. They're trying to bring back some validity and integrity to the rank of black belt. And when I saw that, I'm like, this is why my dad wants me to be with this organization. And that's why I hang on every word they say. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So you and I are cut from the same cloth when it comes to this. I don't actually get more skilled by embroidering more thread on my belt. It actually doesn't make me any better at all. Which is why I'm a white belt in so many things. I saw that you were interested in the Duval Sensei's Kyokushin thing.
I actually interviewed him. He was one of my early guests, and
really.
Yeah.
So he's my Kyokushin instructor.
Yeah. I actually had noticed that he was doing some classes or something at your school.
So I go formally get promoted to my second orange tomorrow.
Oh, right on.
And I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to get a friggin' orange belt. I'm so thrilled. And so my jam right now, what I'm doing to what I call work towards being worthy of the position that I'm in, because I am in the position that I am. I am the senior rank in the Legends martial arts system under my father. I'm the senior rank. All of my black belts kind of look to me to be in charge. For better or worse, that's how it is, right? In order to be worthy of that, I have to stay as much of a beginner as I can and continue my own training. So I study Kali once a week. I've been doing that for several years. As soon as I get my black belt in Kali, which will happen this year sometime, I'm immediately going into Wing Chun.
Oh, very nice.
I do Muay Thai for an hour once a week. I do Kyokushin for an hour once a week. I do boxing for 2 hours twice a week. And then I do jiu-jitsu on Sundays once a week. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to pack as much as I can into the years that I have left, because I know I'm going to get too old to do this before too long.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm 70, I won't be able to keep training like this. And so so that's what I'm doing, and that's what I think it's important. I think that if you're the head of a school and you're not in the Shoshin, like the beginner's mind, that white belt moment, if you're not doing that, I think you're getting worse. I don't think you're getting better.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, we're definitely kindred spirits in that. In that, you know, now that I'm doing the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, looks like I'm getting back into Hapkido. I'm still doing Capoeira.
Good.
I'm still doing Kempo at least once a week, and working on all that stuff. I actually need to talk to Sensei Duval about. So I'm kind of in this kind of weird transitional period since my Kempo school closed recently. I'm kind of in this weird transitional period. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to Sensei Duval about is maybe not exactly joining his school just yet, but coming in and occasionally coming in and getting to kind of spar with his guys and kind of work out with his crew from time to time, so that I can still do my Kempo, but I need to get some body time on on folks. So we'll definitely have to talk about that. But
how often do you spar?
Not nearly enough. That's one of the things that I'm trying to kind of work out a situation to where I can kind of spar on a regular basis to keep my skills up and whatnot.
Let me ask you a question. Do you are you open to sparring at a light contact
level? Oh yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have open sparring every Friday.
I'm just learning this. Okay, see, this is great. Yeah. Networking.
Every Friday at 6, come in. So I have about a third of the people that come are not my students. They're from other school. One of the guys that has been coming for the last 3 years, he's a Taekwondo guy. His school shut down during COVID. He's homeless. He's got nowhere to fight. And so he comes in and fights. And as long as somebody can get with my culture, because we're not, one of the things that has changed is we're not a blood on the floor school anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't do mm-hmm. it that way. I did for years. Let's just put it this way. I know how to set broken noses. Because I've set my own and I've set many other people's broken noses. And I was, Reggie, I was perversely proud of it. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, I was like, yeah, we're a real karate school and, you know, and blood everywhere. And, you know, we do, you know, we're real. And then I started training with some people that were really high level from all over the country. And you know what I found out? They don't train that way. Like real fighters, like people who make a lot of money fighting, they don't do what I was doing. Because they can't. Like they can't afford to be hurt every 6 weeks just from practicing. And so I started training with them. I started studying with them and I realized these guys are, they're touch pressure in their sparring. They're 30% at most hitting each other. And then I started really, really honestly watching a lot of podcasts and finding out that when you spar at that kind of level, psychologically, you've engaged your sympathetic nervous system and put yourself in that fight or flight. Well, guess what? You don't retain what happens because your brain is not in a play state. It's not in a flow state. But when you and I are just barely tagging each other and moving around, in that playful mindset, you actually retain the skill you get. And you can show up every single Friday and do it because you're not hurt. And so that's our culture. Now, we've had some people come in and spar with us, and I've been like, listen, if you don't change what you're doing, you can't come back and spar. Because not only do we not do that, but my people will hurt them. Like, they'll get hurt. Because we have some really good fighters here. And so as long as that's something that you could get with and you don't have a problem hitting and kicking light, that's what we do.
Very nice. Yeah.
We'd love to have
you. We'll definitely get hooked up on that and get going on that.
Hold on. I got to scratch my foot.
I'm glad that you brought that up. So we'll definitely have to make that happen then. I like it. So going back to the beginning times for persons like yourself that really grew up with this. I from other guests that I've had in that same kind of situation, I'm always curious, was there kind of a separation between the training and life, as in I kind of imagine this sort of a Mr. Miyagi kind of situation where you're always in a karate lesson, you know, the dad saying, hey, you know, do this chore, and this is a secret karate lesson. Or you know, taekwondo lesson, or was there, you know, a clear separation where, you know, okay, we're at home, we're living the normal home life, and then okay, now we need to go to the school and train, or were you kind of always on as far as the growing up in training?
I was always on. And, so, you know, my dad was a karate teacher to his core. Like, that's what he did, right? And now maybe my sister would give you a very different answer to this question because she was not a karate person. And so my reality was that, yes, I mean, he didn't make me paint houses and fences and wash and wax cars, but yeah, he would drag me out of bed at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning to hit the tie pads. And, I still remember I was, 9 or 10 years old. And I walked through the gate, the fence, and my dad was hiding around the side and jumped out and scared me. It scared me to death. Like, obviously, I was 9 or 10 years old. I was terrified, right? And he said, if you're going to live like a warrior, you have to act like one. And what his point was that I didn't look around the corner to see if there was anything there. And he said, you know, learning how to fight is actually the last resort. Avoidance and paying attention and awareness is actually the safest thing that you can do. And so we would play games where I would have to, literally in my house, like we were two kids, where I would walk around corners expecting him to jump out and scare me. And it created this mindset in me to always pay attention to my surroundings. Now, my dad was very loving. It wasn't an abusive thing. It ended up turning into a game with us. There were some things that other people would claim were probably excessive. This is a true story, but we lived in the country in Texas, right? And so in the summer, scorpions would come in our house because it was too hot outside, so they would come in the house. So we had scorpions in the house all the time. And my dad and I took turns throwing a punch and trying to crush them. And if you got them between your knuckles, they would sting you. And if you caught it on the knuckle, it wouldn't. Now, I understand that that is stupid, and most people think that that is ridiculous, right? But for me, it was great fun. It was about timing and focus, and so he didn't make me do it. It was a thing that we did. So yeah, there was a little bit of Miyagi in my growing up, but I am exceedingly grateful for it. Now, I will tell you something else that I'm fiercely proud of, okay? I have what's called, I call it my V card. And it's not, obviously I have two kids, so clearly it's not a real V card. But I don't have any war stories to share with you. I've got none. Now, I've got a lot of karate tournament stories to share with you. I've got a lot of sparring stories to share with you. But I don't have one single story where someone tried to hurt me in the street where I had to ball up my fist or my foot and injure them in any way. Now, I have had a few situations where I maybe had to submit somebody, you know, with a choke or a lock or something like that, but they were not hurt. At the end of it, we talked it out. Everything was fine. I am so proud of the fact that I have been able to de-escalate every fight that has come my way, because I understand something spiritually as a martial artist, is that if you jump me in the street and you back me into a corner and give me no choice but to hurt you, even if it was the last resort, I can't hurt you without hurting myself more. It causes me more harm to intentionally hurt somebody else. It causes me more harm spiritually than it does them. And so any possible way that I can use my words and my calm demeanor to de-escalate a situation, that's actually real self-defense. We call self-defense beating people up, but most of the time it's just beating people up. You're looking for an excuse to hurt somebody because you are spiritually unevolved. You're too much like an animal. You haven't embraced your higher self. And understand that our job is not to hurt people. Our job is to help people. And I'm very proud of that. And I know that sets me apart from a lot of karate guys. I know a lot of karate guys are very proud of the beating people up that they've done. And I'm very proud that I don't have any stories like that. Does that make sense?
No, I like it. I'm in the same boat. I've trained a lot of years, but... fortunately, I haven't had to apply that very often, so hardly ever. So I wear that as a badge of honor.
Badge of honor, right? Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have a saying that, you know, they always say violence isn't the answer, right? Violence isn't the answer until it's the only answer. Right? If you see a kid getting pulled in a van, violence is the only answer. There is no discussion. There is no reaching out for help. Violence is the only solution to that problem. If you go into an alley and you see a woman being assaulted, violence is the only answer to that. And so that's why we have to learn how to do it. Because In the rare event that it is the only answer, you better know how to do it. But, so, you know the blood and guts era, right, that they talk about in karate, right? The 60s, right? So, the guys that you hear about, right, the Ed Parkers, the Fred Wren, the Skipper Mullins, the Alan Steens, you know, these guys that you hear these stories about were in my house growing up. Like, they were my dad's friends. And so, but do you know what I remember about them? Now, remember, I was a child. I don't remember anything violent. What I remember is they were the kindest, gentlest, most respectful people that I'd ever seen. So I grew up seeing that as strength. Real strength is softness. It's gentleness. It's being kind to people. That's actually what strength looks like. And I'm so grateful that I was, that was modeled for me. Does that make sense? My dad was a very gentle, loving person. And apparently not in the ring. I've seen footage. But in everyday life, he was kind and he was gentle. And I'm so grateful that that was demonstrated as true strength to me. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like that chest bumping, arrogance, posturing, you know, like two roosters, you know what I mean? That's actually weakness. Weak people act like that, not strong people. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. That's, it's more impressive to me to be the kind person, the good person versus the brawler. One of the things that I love, so I got to interview Rob with McDojo Life, and
Did you really?
He was one of my early guests. So, but there's something that he has said that I love, in that people make this big deal about, oh well, like, you know, this guy can beat this guy in a fight or whatever. And I guess the analogy that he used is martial arts is the only place where that mindset seems to flourish, in that
right.
If you were in an office, if Joe the janitor can beat up the CEO, like, nobody cares. Like, that doesn't make
right. Nobody cares.
Who cares if the janitor can beat up the CEO? You know, one guy is still the CEO, one guy's still the janitor. So when Rob said that, I just that really stuck to me. It's like, oh yeah, only in martial arts schools do we make a big deal about that. And that's all, that was always funny to me. It's easy to punch somebody in the eye socket, but to be a kind person and be a respectful person, that especially in the face of people that just want to punch you, it burns a lot more calories. It's a lot harder to be the good guy.
Like, are you strong enough to swallow your pride, apologize when you know you weren't wrong, just so it doesn't escalate? Because that takes a lot of strength to do that, is to master your anger, you know? And it's funny because, you know, when people, and I know you've been in martial arts most of your life, right? Yeah. So, and when people that find out we do martial arts, the very first thing out of their mouth is, whoa, don't mess with him. And I'm like, actually, I'm the best person to mess with. I'm the safest guy in the world. You can mess with me all you want because I won't fight you. Like, we can throw the gloves on and go hit the bags and work out and spar and be friends. Well, I'd be happy to do that. But you can't make me fight you. You can't make me angry enough to hit you. I just won't do it, you know? And that makes me feel really good about myself. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I'm about to do this this girls' self-defense thing with these Girl Scouts. I've got about 10 or 15 of them coming in with their families. And I'm going to tell them what I'm about to tell you, is that if you're truly interested in self-defense, learn avoidance. That's actually the best. Once you and I, complete strangers, run into each other on a street, the second the two of us get in an altercation, the odds of us surviving drop dramatically. And it actually doesn't have anything to do with which one of us can fight. Things happen very fast in a street fight, especially in a world with so many blades and guns, Like, if you truly want to survive, don't fight. Don't be there. De-escalate. That's the safest thing you can do. I love the blade. I've got blades everywhere. I've got them in my car. I've got them everywhere, right? I'm as fanatical about blades as gun people are about guns, right? And man, I will feel amazing if I never have to cut anybody my entire life. If I can go to my grave never having cut anybody. But once you're in a knife fight, odds are you're not going to make it. No matter how good you are, you're probably not going to make it. They're going to cut you. They're going to get your neck. They're going to get your, you know, they're going to catch a major artery. And so to really understand that what most people call self-defense is actually just embracing violence. And, you know, violence is the language of people who refuse to communicate. You know? And we see it in the world all around us, Reggie. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, since you have kind of a hardish out, we're going to go ahead and move to our lightning round here to get you closed out. So I got a few little questions here. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Jump, turn, back kick.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. Right, do you have a favorite form or kata or pumse or whatever terminology that you guys use?
Yeah, I would have to say Kankudai. It's a Shotokan form.
Okay. All right. Very nice. Very nice. Right. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, I usually did do this question as one question, but I'm splitting it up now. So it is the first part of it is, you know, anyone that you could train with, whether you've already trained with them or not, living or dead. Non-fictional, you know, real people is the first part of the question. And then the second part of the question is fictional people. Who would you want to train with?
I would definitely say this answer would have been different 3 years ago. But now my answer is my dad. You know, he was right there and I could have trained with him all the time, and he and I were busy raising families and doing business, and I would love to get a couple of hours back training with my dad. But I'm sure anybody with a parent who is deceased would say that, you know. And then fictional, I would have to say... Yeah, all right. Miyamoto Musashi was a real history and character, in a real character in history. But I would love to train with the version that we have made him up to be, which is probably not that accurate.
Oh,
does that make sense? We have a 47 Ronin kind of thing with him where I don't want to train with a historical Musashi. I want to train with what we've trumped him up to be. The mythical figure of Musashi.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
I like it.
And I don't think I want to train with him. I think... I want to do a Q&A. I want to do a podcast with him on the Book of Five Rings.
Yes.
That's what I want to do. I just want to talk to him.
Yeah. I like it. Good answer. I like it. All right. So now we are going to move into shameless self-promotion. So now you can plug anything you want or anything that maybe we hadn't talked about that you want to get out there. Now's your chance. You have the floor. I mean, we're definitely going to have to do this again, but and get into, you know, some many more topics. But go ahead and throw out any plugs or anything that you wanted to say, and then we'll close out for today.
absolutely. So obviously the shameless self-promotion, which is the thing that I'm the worst at. But if you are in the mid-cities and you want to see kind of a good hybrid school, like, we're not clearly even in the ballpark of good at jiu-jitsu as my jiu-jitsu teacher is, who's also in Hearst, right? If you want to do jiu-jitsu, you need to go to Henzo Gracie, right? But let's say you don't know what you want to do, right? You just don't, you can't pick a food, so you want to go to a world buffet where they do a little of this and a little of this and a little of this and a little of this. Then Legends is a school for you. We do some Muay Thai. We do some Kali. We do some karate. We do some Taekwondo. We do some Jiu-Jitsu. We don't do a whole bunch of any of it. But that's kind of how our system evolved. My dad was like that my whole life. Very much a jack of all trades school, but we have a great kids program. And we don't hire from outside. So there are no instructors in my school that are not the grown children of students from decades ago. All of our students are graduates of our school. I mean, all of our instructors are. So, yeah, that's it.
Very nice. Very nice. And, I will put links to that in the show notes. And since you didn't bring it up, I will bring it up that you have a wonderful podcast yourself, the Legends and Dragons podcast there.
Oh, yeah. We do a podcast, too. I forget that we do that, yeah.
So, I will plug that. I had Jimmy on my show recently. The episode hasn't come out yet, but... had a nice chat with him. So I will put the links in, so folks out there definitely check that out. And I just thank you so much for taking the time to chit chat with me and getting to hear a little bit of your story there. And we'll definitely have to do this again and get into more stuff. But yeah, I just thank you again.
And you got to come spar with us.
Gonna put my gear in the bag, and I will definitely come see y'all real soon. So
can't wait to meet you.
All right, sounds good. Well, all right thank buddy. You have a great day.
You have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.